My name is William Pitt. I am a captain and the EMS Education Coordinator, Quality Assurance Coordinator at the Walker County Fire Department in Northwest Georgia. I've been involved in EMS for some time now, and what I would like to talk about today is the management of congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is an interesting condition because it is a heart problem that manifests itself as a respiratory issue often, but sometimes we also see the cardiovascular effects as well. So it kind of complicates our management because you can have three patients with congestive heart failure whose vital signs may be wildly different and whose management strategies are also going to change because of that presentation. So to start things off, a couple of case scenarios. The first one is a 64-year-old female who has had several episodes of paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, where she suddenly awakens during the middle of the night with significant shortness of breath, and at the time of call had been experiencing progressively worsening shortness of breath, a delayed calling for EMS, and upon our arrival, was very, very short of breath, cyanotic about the mouth, sitting tripod with lungs that were obviously full, even without auscultation. She was tachycardic and slightly hypertensive, pressure in the 160s range. And she was a history of CHF. It had problems with managing her congestive heart failure in the past. The second case is actually a 40-year-old male who, because of some viral damage done to his heart tissue at a younger age, had congestive heart failure, which resulted in a poor ejection fraction. And because of his condition, he's been having CHF problems for many years now. And he presented to us somewhat short of breath with mild pulmonary congestion, but significant hypotension. So what's kind of interesting about those cases is the two patients both look similar in that they look sick. The moment you walk in and see them, you can tell that neither of them were doing very well. And their problem, their actual underlying condition, was very similar, but their presentations were so different. So in order to start deciding the best pathway to manage these patients, first, you have to understand a little bit of physiology behind congestive heart failure. And without going into great depth, a key term that you will need to know is afterload. Afterload is one of the most important terminology, or one of the most important terms that you can know when it comes to talking about congestive heart failure. So what is afterload? Afterload is the pressure in your blood vessels against which your heart is pushing. So when you think about what it is that congestive heart failure is, it's simply the heart's inability to overcome that afterload. There's too much pressure in the blood vessels, the heart can't push against it, so blood starts to back up, you get pulmonary hypertension, and you get pulmonary edema. So looking at these case studies, there are a couple of management pathways that we can take, but they start fairly similarly. And this is the best way that I've found over experiencing many CHF patients with different varying presentations to manage their condition. So the first thing I always look at, and the first thing we should always be assessing, is their criticality. You walk through the door, kind of your initial impression, you look at your patient, and within the first couple of seconds, you can quite easily tell whether or not somebody is sick. So take a look at them from the doorway. You don't have to touch them. Don't even really have to hear them. You can just look at them and say, this person is sick. This person is not sick. Both of the people I talked about before were sick. So we walk through the door, and the next thing we see is a primary exam. So we do a primary assessment. We're looking at their airway status, their breathing status, their circulatory status. And right off the bat, the first case, the 64-year-old female, you can tell that her airway and breathing were not in good shape. So we see these symptoms, and right off the bat, we have to correct those ABC type issues, or the patient's going to devolve very quickly. So how do we manage these initial symptoms, these life-threatening symptoms? Things may be as simple as oxygen administration. We can assess their pulse oximetry. We can assess their capnography. And we can simply do a physical exam and an assessment and determine whether or not they seem to be ventilating appropriately, and something as simple as some oxygen by nasal cannula or oxygen by non-rebreather may be effective at improving their status and helping them maintain until we can deal with their overall problem. If simple oxygen administration, things like nasal cannula non-rebreather, are ineffective, then a great tool that we have in our arsenal, which is becoming much more popular and much more available, is CPAP. And on this first patient, the 64-year-old female, CPAP was the immediate remedy to her presenting symptoms. She has significant fluid in her lungs. Because of that fact, she's not able to ventilate well. And so using CPAP to help her maintain ventilation, prevent her from degrading to the point that she requires intubation, will do a lot as far as buying us time to deal with the underlying issues that are causing her pulmonary edema. So what does CPAP do for her? Or what does CPAP do in general? And depending on the system you have, it's either a continuous amount of pressure or a pressure that varies depending on whether they are inhaling or expiring. But the big thing that we're concerned about here is the PEEP, the peak end expiratory pressure. So not necessarily the pushing of air in, but the pressure against which she's breathing out. And that's what's been benefiting her here is we apply the CPAP mask, we use the CPAP device. She gets assistance with inhalation because it's applying some extra pressure to her as she breathes in, but it's also making her breathe out against more pressure. So what does this do for us? It helps splint alveoli. It helps kind of hold these airways open and makes it much easier for her to ventilate. So now we've got the immediate breathing problem taken care of. But unless we fix her overreaching problem, which is her cardiovascular issue, then there really is nothing we're doing with the CPAP except buying time. The CPAP is not going to remove the fluid from her lungs. It's not going to cure her condition. It is simply helping her maintain until we fix the problem. So now that we have her A, B, and C taken care of, we can get a little more in depth, get some more medical history, look at the past problems she's had with this, consider her other health factors, maybe lifestyle factors that are worsening her condition, things in her environment that are making this worse. And we can start formulating a management plan or a management pathway. And one of the most important things that we can do when we have this patient who, at this point, she's got too much afterload, right? So her heart is pushing against too much pressure, so blood is backing up. Her heart's not able to overcome that afterload adequately. We get the pulmonary edema, and so because of that, her blood pressure is elevated. That's the afterload. That's that increased pressure. And so the best thing we can do amongst all of the medications that we carry, anything that's at your disposal to deal with her issue acutely, is to fix her afterload. So if you think about medications that we carry and that we use with great frequency to manage afterload, if I want to manage her afterload, all I have to do is decrease the resistance against which her heart is beating. To do that, all I have to do is dilate her blood vessels. So if you think for a second about medications that we use regularly that dilate blood vessels, one should probably pop to mind fairly quickly, and that is nitroglycerin. Nitrate administration, once you have managed the initial symptoms, so you've essentially stabilized a CHF patient long enough to manage them, the use of nitrates is far and away your best friend when it comes to their management, assuming that their blood pressure can support it. I said earlier she was mildly hypertensive, so with this elevated blood pressure, I can use nitrates. I can dilate her blood vessels. You see her pressure come down some. You see the afterload decrease. And so over the course of time, this decreased afterload, it's the heart can now pump more efficiently. We don't get that pressure backing up into the pulmonary blood flow. And so we improve the edema. So we are actually managing not only the symptoms with the CPAP, but the problem. Now, the flip side of this issue is the second patient. So he has congestive heart failure. His afterload may not necessarily be higher than normal, but because of the damage to his heart, even at 40 years old, because of this damage that was done to his heart, his afterload might be normal for you or I, but it is more than his sick heart can overcome. In fact, far more. I mentioned that he was pale, cold, diaphoretic, mildly dyspneic, but not profoundly. His lungs were, he had fine bibasilar rails, but no real significant edema that we could find, but he is near syncopal and attempt to take a manual blood pressure and you're not able to get one. We eventually got a value of 48 systolic by NIBP. The monitor blood pressure was the closest thing to an accurate blood pressure that we could find. We weren't able to find one manually. So obviously this patient is quite sick. Monitoring, dealing with his ABCs. So we've got his airway and his breathing taken care of, and then we get to this circulatory status. So blood pressure of 48 systolic is obviously not going to sustain his vital organs for very long. He lacks the mean arterial pressure to perfuse his kidneys. Other organs are going to start getting in trouble fairly quickly. So when you get this variety of congestive heart failure, we can manage the initial symptoms. Now, if he had been significantly dyspneic, then CPAP would have been an option. Given his present condition, oxygen administration is definitely indicated. So after we've handled these symptoms, we have to start dealing with his problem. Now, if the problem with CHF, as we've discussed thus far, is that the heart is not able to overcome this afterload, it would be logical that, like the first patient, we would decrease the afterload to make it more efficient or make it easier for the heart to overcome that pressure, thus creating a more effective pump. The problem is, patient has a blood pressure of 48 systolic. Think quickly what one of the immediate contraindications for nitroglycerin administration is going to be. So we create vasodilation in this patient. We give him nitroglycerin. Blood pressure is 48 initially. Then what's his blood pressure going to be after we administer the nitro? Odds are good, it's not going to be fantastic. So we can't decrease afterload to maintain this patient, because by decreasing his afterload, we are worsening his current problem or his current presentation, worsening his blood pressure and essentially making him sicker. So the other option we have available to us when we get this particular presentation of congestive heart failure are vasopressors. Now, like I said, ideally we would prefer to decrease afterload to let the heart pump more effectively, but since we can't do that in this position, in order to make or allow the patient to maintain, we use something, dopamine is usually the first that that comes to mind. So you start an infusion with dopamine, and so that does a few things for us. It increases the heart rate, which will help us increase his blood pressure. It increases the contractile force with which the heart beats, also to our benefit. So since we can't decrease his afterload, instead we just make his heart pump more effectively, and thus the heart can overcome the afterload that is presently there, and we start seeing an elevation in his blood pressure. In between the two, there's kind of an intermediate point where you have people who present with a normal blood pressure or slightly hypotensive, maybe between 80 and 110 or so, who are having the pulmonary congestion. Once again, their heart's not overcoming their afterload. So we have another management trick that we can use, or I say a trick, a medication that's available that you might consider if it's available in your area, and that is dobutamine. Now, keep in mind, even though dopamine and dobutamine are packaged similarly, they're dosed similarly, their effects are not the same. Dobutamine is not going to give you the increase in blood pressure that we're looking for with the dopamine for the patient who was presenting with a very, very low blood pressure. If you were to use dobutamine, it's not going to give you the positive effect. What dobutamine does for you is just helps the heart pump more efficiently. So if you allow the heart to, if you increase this the contractile strength of the heart, you make the contractions more efficient, you can manage a patient there. And sometimes you get into situations with very complicated patients. This is something that unless your protocols allow it, you probably want to do in consultation with medical control, where you wind up using both a vasopressor like dopamine and a combination of dopamine and dobutamine to keep the patient maintained. The big thing to remember when managing these patients is that you can't take a specific presentation and assign the label of congestive heart failure to it. It's something that is found through your history, your physical exam, a previous diagnosis, and then based on that, you assess your patient's status and decide sort of what variety of congestive heart failure you're seeing and vary your management techniques accordingly. So the overall, I guess, take-home point from this is when you assess your patients, first and foremost, you have to correct issues having to do with A, B, and C. So if we wind up with pulmonary edema as the major presenting complaint, it's affecting their respiratory status to the point that they're unsustainable. If we don't deal with that immediately, we're in big trouble. So consider things like CPAP and potentially intubation. And then after we have the patient stabilized, we've dealt with these initial presenting symptoms, then we can take our assessment, our physical exam, the things that we have been looking at, and use that to formulate a management strategy. I would encourage anybody to do a little more research on this topic. It's one that we see very often. It's a common presenting complaint. It's very, very complicated. But once you sort of understand the physiology behind what's happening and use that and consider it along with management options that you have available to you, then managing these patients who are often quite complicated becomes much, much easier. Thank you.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.